Parshas Lech Lecha, right? Tavshin Ayin Hey. It's Perek Tes Zayin Pasuk Yud Beis. So Perek Tes Zayin Pasuk Yud Beis. This is after Hagar has run away. She had just miscarried Lefi the Medrash, and she spoke to four different malachim that saw her. One of the malachim said, "Vayomer lo malach Hashem." This is in Pasuk Yud Aleph. Hina Har of Yoladet Vein. You're going to become pregnant. You're going to give birth to a child. The Karas Shmo Yishmal. His name will be Yishmal. Kishom Hashem Elan Yech. God has listened or will listen to your supplications. Bui Yatara Adam. He will be, and that's what we're going to speak about. What does Tara Adam mean? An animal of a man. Yado Bakol V'Yad Kol Bo. His hand is against everything, and everyone's hand is against him. V'Apnei Kol Achav Yishkon. And he'll live among all of his brothers. He'll live among all the people that are called his brothers. So what we're going to deal with is like this. Rashi says, the translation for this Tara Adam is Oiv Midbaros Letzud Chayos. He loved the wilderness. He loved trapping wild animals. That's what he loved doing. That was his thing. And therefore, he was known as a para adam, a man who was of the wilderness. He was going to be great with weapons. That's what it seems to say, according to Rashi. He would be a tremendous hunter. And that was in his ear. But he would also be yado bakol, says Rashi. Listen, he would be an armed robber who would go out and try to kill people and steal from them by the wayside. And then, kolbo, yad kolbo, hakol sonin, so everybody despises him. When he's going though and starts up fights with him, that's what they're going to do. V'alpinei kol achav yishkon says she is zaro gadol. His children will become numerous, very, very many. They're going to multiply rapidly. There's going to be more people than you can imagine. That's the definition Rashi says of Yishmael. So four different parts again. Number one, he's going to love the wild. Number two, he's going to be an armed robber. Number three, people will hate them. Number four, he will have tremendous amounts of children. And that's right there, the four brachos that are given over to Yishmael.
How's that bracha?
We're going to ask that. We're going to give six answers. But that will be one of our main issues for today. Yonazim ben Uzziel, Targum Yonazim ben Uzziel, compares him to a wild donkey that lives in the wild, in the wilderness, that he grows up that way. He's going to create many enemies for himself, but he's going to punish those enemies thanks to his tremendous numbers. The fact that he has so many people on his side, therefore he'll be able to punish those enemies. The Tosefis Bracha, the Tani Dekra, and the Maril Diskin all say that it's describing, if you were just describing what kind of person he was, that it should be Adam Pera. The same way you say Adam Chashuv or Adam Rasha when it comes to Hebrew, it's always the name, the main category first, and then the description second. But over here it's Pera Adam. So it means, says all of them, Reb Chaim Kanievsky, Maral Diskin, and Tosefis Bracha, and Reb Baruch Epstein, that his real Atmos was an animal. He really was an animal, but he was also a human being. He looked like a human being, but he literally was an animal in a human body. And that's how you describe Yishmael. That's the way that it would be. Now the Mechilta in Yisro says that these people, meaning the Arabs themselves, took this extremely seriously. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu came and asked them if they would accept the Torah, they said, what's in it? What's the Torah? What's in the Torah that you're giving us? And they were told, lo signos, you can't steal, literally means you can't kidnap, but included in that is that you're not allowed to steal. They told them they couldn't do it. This is the bracha that was given our father. Our father was given a bracha of Hu Yiyah Pera Adam. And it says, Yado Bako, our bracha is to steal. There's no way that we could go against the bracha that was given to us by the Malach. Now there's different versions of this Medrash in the Sifri and Devarim and Shin Mem Gimel and Echa Rabba Gimel Zayin, but nonetheless it was all based around this idea of how in the world could we go ahead and take something which is against our nature. Our nature is to steal. We have to steal. That was the line that they said.
To this day.
To this day. Well, I don't want to say that because then I can get in trouble on tape. I'll just say that there are other people that this may have referred to, and it's possible it applies to some people today as well. Let's make that easier that way. But that's that. Oh, yeah, Farah, don't. No, it's okay, Uterum. It's fine. The Sforno says it's a bit of a split. Another way of looking at it. From his mother, he'll be a donkey. And the reason why is because it describes the Mitzrim as Asher Besar Chamorim Bisarum, that their flesh is like the flesh of a donkey, and they act like animals. And that's what it means. But from the father, meaning from Avram, he's going to be a human being. So, Para from his mother, Adam from his father. And that will allow him to do tshuva toward the end of his life. We know that Yishmael did tshuva toward the end of his life because when they buried Avram Avinu, he went before Yitzchak Avinu. That's what it ends up being. The Malbim says very similarly. On the one hand, he was an animal. He got into fights often and he started wars. On the other hand, he was a human being. He had Achdus with his friends. He had two, almost like a split personality. Where with his friends, he was unbelievable. Just an unbelievable person. While with his enemies, he was the worst of enemies. And that's how he acted toward everybody. He acted in different ways toward different people. Now, Rabbi Avigdor Miller takes a completely different approach over here. He says that it really means he's a wild man of the wilderness, accustomed to living in that area. Hagar was told this as a bracha. And here's the real bracha. And this is one of the answers to your question, Binyamin, from before. The bracha is, it's not that you're going to be in war all the time. You'll be capable of warring against all your adversaries. You're going to flourish in the desert. In the desert, you're going to find everything you need. Whenever you need something, you'll be the person to be able to get it when you're in the desert. There were Arab merchants that are mentioned in the Gemara, especially by Rabba Bar Bar Chana, who were able to almost be morach ara. They could take up a piece of ground, they could take some of the sand, smell it, and they could tell you how far away water was. They'd be able to tell you where certain things were from certain areas. These people lived on the land. They became not just nomads, literally the kings of all the nomads. They knew where to live, where not to live, how to find water in the desert, where to get water in the desert. All these things, that's what they became experts in, and that's the idea. They were always able to adapt to whatever situation went around them. That's what they were able to do. This ability enabled Yishmael to prosper as much as he did, and avoid, and here's where Victor Miller's line, they avoided the company of Odeh Avodah Zarah. They no longer had any shaykhus with people that worshipped idols, and they never did. They always remained separate. Arabs never got involved with the idolatry, the idolaters that lived in the Far East, even though they're the closest to them. The Muslims stayed away, and that was a bracha. That's the idea of the children of Avraham Avinu. It wasn't Muslims though. Whatever the Arabs were, right? Until whatever it was before that time, they had something. And although it wasn't that, they were that. It's always pagans. But the Arabs themselves always had something that connected them with a god. Whether it was Allah, or whatever they want to call it now, you know, based on Muhammad, or whatever it was, there was something that they had. And says Rabbi Victor Miller, in this vein, they emulated their father. They were like Avraham Avinu. They dwelled alone. They were not in the company of anybody who did rishus, anybody who did something evil. They remained on their own, the Arabs, and they stayed that way. And for some reason, that was something that they got so involved with. That was their literally, their osmos. Everything about them became about that. Now, just to add this on a little bit, we think of Yishmael as sort of like Avraham Avinu's mistake. You know, he had the kid, and then all of a sudden he's like, ah, whatever, what's the difference? Why do I bother needing Yishmael? It's clearly not true. If you say that Yishmael was a mistake, then toward the end of Avraham Avinu's life, when he was together with Keturah and had six other children that he added on, and then added them on to where Yishmael was living, it's clear as day that Avraham Avinu felt that these children have to survive. He wanted to spread monotheism throughout the world, and he wanted it to be not just through HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not just through Hashem. He wanted monotheism to be gone throughout everywhere, so not just the Jews would be out there doing everything, but even the Arabs would be able to show people there is one God. He wanted the Ishmaelim to do this, and in that sense, says Rav Victor Miller, this is the bracha. Yado bakol, yad kobo, but apnei kolachav yishkon. He'll live together with his brothers, he'll stay away from the people that do evil, he'll make sure that he doesn't do avodah zarah, and things will be great for him and his people. That's the idea behind what Rav Victor Miller was saying, and that's a bracha. That's a tremendous bracha, that no matter how bad he is, nonetheless, he'll always be a definition of what Avraham Avinu wanted from his children. Now, let's go to a different thing. Now, all those were dealing with the word perez in wild, or an animal, and that was the definition over there. And the Ibn Ezra calls the word para, freedom. That's what it refers to. Freedom. They will never be slaves to any other nation. I don't know if this is, historically, you'd have to look this up. Did the Arabs ever become slaves to another nation at any point in time? Meaning, we know that the Africans did. We know the Jews did to the Babylonians at some point. Did the Arabs become slaves? Did the Ishmaelim become slaves at any point to any other time? Says Ibn Ezra, their freedom. They will never be slaves to anyone outside of their family. He means that whenever people come to him in the wilderness, in the desert, they will defeat them. And they're going to be the instigator of many wars. Remember when the Ibn Ezra lived. We're talking, you know, the 1100s, right, when the Arabs were a warring nation going around everywhere. And they're going to be very successful at some points. But afterward, everybody will come up against them and destroy them. And that's that Yad Kol Bo. People will go up and they'll destroy them. And that he is the fourth Chaya mentioned in Daniel, Zion, Zion. He was the one that's mentioned in Daniel that said, says that he's going to be the one that comes up, a chaya that they couldn't describe, this massive chaya, but then it's gone. All of a sudden it's gone. This powerful chaya that wasn't there. Rav Hirsch says he's a para first, and then an adam. He is going to be the most free among mankind. This does not mean animal. It means he will be free. What does that mean? He will not have the yoke of normal man or the constraints of a city. See, when a person lives among other people and you're living in a city together with other people, then that means that you start doing what everybody else does just because it's automatic. I don't really care about, I mean, who did care about the World Series? Like, Giants and the Royals? I mean, come on. And at Game 7, I was willing to listen to, like, the last inning in my car on the way home. But I was willing to listen to that, you know? Because I was, like, sitting there. But you look at it, you're just like, come on. I mean, honestly, is there something like, what is, it's a World Series that really means absolutely nothing. But because you're sort of like, you're in society, you're right over there, you feel like you want to be excited. Who can hold back? I mean, only tzaddikim and real geeks can hold back from watching a Super Bowl. Who can do it? There's Super Bowl parties everywhere. Everywhere you go, there's Super Bowl parties in the street. If you're driving on Super Bowl Sunday at around that time, at around 7 o'clock, people look at you strange. But nobody's looking. That's the problem. There's so many people. You get just drawn into everything that's there. The whole thing just gets you. And that's the idea. Says Rav Hirsch, right? This is the idea. This is going to be the social character of all the Yishma'ilim. This is their social character. It's the idea of he will never be constrained. He'll never feel like he is going to fit in with society. He will make his own society among other societies. It's a crazy idea, but it's 100% true nowadays. Wherever they go, they take on their own little thing, almost like us, I guess similar to what we do, although we kind of assimilate pretty quickly. Right? But the idea is that they stay on their own, they make their own thing, and they become their own thing. What is this?
So
yeah.
It refers to this large world, you know.
It makes so much sense, yeah. Yeah.
Clans and tribes and the Bedouin lifestyle, and it's only, you know, 100 until the European powers colonized the Muslim world.
And that's what it was for years. Even now, when they go in, they almost colonize parts of Europe. It's like they take over. It's such an unbelievable... I mean, obviously, Rav Hirsch is writing this in the late 1800s. He's describing, you know, the character of the Yishma'ilim, saying it's right there. I mean, this is what he's seeing over here. Whenever... Now, he says the following. He says, whenever you see the word al-pnei, it refers to limiting your field of vision. It's that you're at odds. You're in a fight with someone. That's what al-panay means, al-panav. It limits you from what you're going to see. Sometimes you wish not to see it, right? And if you don't want to see it, it's something that you don't want to see, that's called al-panav. Like, for example, in Yirmiyah, Tezvav Aleph, in spite of all of his brothers, Yishmael will have no friends. But no one will dare to oppose him. No one's going to come up against him. That's how Rav Hirsch says it. And the idea is that everybody's going to be scared to go up against all those people because of some type of power that they're going to have. Nowadays, that's through natural gas, right? The idea of what kind of power the Arabs have, that no one's willing to step up to the plate and do something. Now, the Netziv says it a bit differently. He does say it's freedom, and Per Adam means he's a free man. But he says the different types. He's small, everything is hefker. And he can take whatever he wants in the world. The world is his oyster. And he literally can put his hand, yado bakol, his hand is on anything. Anything out there is his for the taking if he can get it. And yad kolbo, on the other hand, people can feel that Yishma'ilim don't really own anything themselves, and they can grab. It's literally up for grabs. He has no concept to the Netziv of Derech Eretz, nor can he understand chashivus ba'adam, that other people have a chashivus just for being human beings. And thus, he's willing to do whatever he wants. And the feeling is mutual throughout the entire world. The world feels the same way about him, that there's nothing there. There is one exception. And we said similar to this before. The Netziv said, their friends, they treat like royalty. They would do anything for their friends and family. That if someone in their family goes down, then they will do it. See, we don't have the Gol Adam anymore. The Redeemer of Blood. If somebody in your family is Chas V'Shalom killed, you have the Gol Adam who goes out and tries to kill instead. But they do. They 100%
family honor.
And they have that family honor. It's there. To an extreme.
Much more than the kinds of Gol Adam in Judaism.
Oh, 100%. 100%. They'll rob and steal from others. But when they get to somebody that they hold as their friend, they won't. How many stories do you have to hear about the Ben Ishchai or something where somebody is traveling from one place to the other and the Bedouin Arabs came up to them, they're ready to steal all their stuff, and they said, oh, are you related to that Rav? Then we're not going to steal from you. Wouldn't do such a thing. Just because it's my friend, I would never steal from a friend. But for anybody else, they'll kill. It doesn't make a difference to them. It's their friends that they're willing to go for. We said something similar before from the Malbim, very similar to the Malbim this is. Now, number our sixth pshat and what this word means, para adam. He says the Chizkuni, the Panach Raza, and it's really mentioned by the Balei Tosfos, they say that para means wares, merchandise. Now, I do not have an etymological reason as to why it means wares or merchandise, but this is what they say. A stranger selling his travel all over, selling his wares without knowing anyone, is called an ish para. It's almost like an open man, a man that no one has ever heard of, no one has anything to do with. That's what they say, that describes Yishmael. We know this from the Chumash. When Yosef HaTzadik was being sold down to Mitzrayim, the people that brought him there were Yishmaelim. The Yishmaelim were bringing down all those spices and everything like that down to Mitzrayim. That's what they did. They were travelers, but not just travelers. They were hackers. They were people that were hacking the wares wherever they went. And this totally describes them. They traveled with merchandise, and that's what it means by Yado Bakol V'Yad Kolbo. Their hand was in every type of merchandise, V'Yad Kolbo, and everybody came to them to get what they needed. They were the ones who were willing to travel all over the world at a time when very few people traveled the world. The Arabs were willing to go there. They were willing to do everything. Okay, that's number six. Number seven, there's a Rash. Now this is a little bit, now we're going to get a little bit more the esoteric types of explanations over here. The Rash, one of the Balei Tosfos, you've seen him maybe, Rabbeinu Shimshon. He writes on Mishnayos. You'll see them on the side of the Mishnayos in Gemaras. You know, when you have the Mishnayos at the back of Brachos or in the back of Nida, you'll see that there's the Rambam on one side, Rash on the other. So Rash is the Baal Tosfos. Quotes the Medrash Rabbah Menhei and says, Yad Kol Bo. If you look at it, Kol Bo can be put together and become Kalbo. Kalbo means his dog. That he was like a dog that is willing to eat anything. They're just like a dog who's willing to eat carcasses. They're willing to eat anything. Now, I find that a little bit strange. I don't know what the habits of most Arabs are. I would assume, I know that they do eat kosher. They eat, what's it called again? Halal, right? So I don't know if they all keep that or if it's just more religion. I don't know if there's a difference between the Sunnis and the Shiites. I have absolutely no idea.
I think it means that the animals kill with a knife.
Just with a knife?
No, really Jewish, really kosher food.
Kosher food, I've seen them buy. I see them at Jewel. I see them going around and buying all the stuff at Jewel, and I know they buy that stuff. I just don't know if they buy, you know, do they have special allow? Is there that stuff in all the stores?
Yeah, sure.
I presume, right? There's a place on Devon and what's it called? Western, right?
What?
Feel by the CRC. Yeah, only the CRC, though. I'm sure they don't hold to the OU, because, you know.
I was just in Turkey. They have restaurants in Turkey that say halal.
They say the actual halal on it. Do they have like an H and an O around it? Is that what they have?
In Arabic, it's...
For them, it's like the OR. Oh, they don't have that though. Okay, but it could be. I don't quite get this as well. But listen to this line. I'm putting this together and I'm thinking that this would be shot. I'm just not positive. Just like a dog will eat anything, he'll eat anything. So there are two Gilgulim of Yishmael. There's two times where Yishmael is mentioned as a Gilgul. One of them is the donkey of Rapinchas ben Yair. It's mentioned by the Seder Adoros. That the donkey of Rapinchas ben Yair, if you remember the Gemara in Chulin Daf Zayin, it mentions that Rapinchas ben Yair's donkey refused to eat food that was not tithed. That Rapinchas ben Yair's donkey was sitting there and they said, why won't your donkey eat? And he said, maybe you didn't take off your trumas and maestros. And like, oh, we didn't. And now they give it off. They're going to ask, you really need to. But the donkey, Rapinchas ben Yair, acted like a tzaddik. So says the Seder Adoros, it wasn't stam. Because Yishmael was willing to eat anything, his tikkun had to be through Rapinchas ben Yair's donkey. It has to be through Rapinchas ben Yair's donkey. I don't know why not Rapinchas ben Yair's dog, but I guess Jews never really own dogs. Never been about. But that is it. And that's the pshat. As we said, Paradam before, somehow he was the chamor, right? The chamor, Amba Doma wa chamor, he's called later on by the Akedah. So he is the one that came back. He ate like a dog. He won't eat like a dog in the future. He'll come back as something that will not eat like a dog. That's the first one. Yeah.
It came in late, but what was the original, just literal translation?
Literal is a wild man. That's the wild man that's going to be. That's the literal translation. The other is mentioned by the Sefer Netzuteh Shemshem Astropolia. It's quoted from the Zid. He does not have a source. And anywhere where this is quoted, it's quoted from HaMekobol Rabbeinu Shemshon. That's what they quoted from. So I don't know if this is a medrash that he knew or just he came up with this. And this is his own chiddush. But Rashi says Yadol Bakol means he was a listin. He was a robber. tzaddik of a Tana or an Amora who is known as a robber. So you have Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish is the well-known robber who Rabbi Yochanan turned around and made him do tshuva. Okay, he fixed it. Yishmol became Rish Lakish. And Rabbi Yochanan was the one that fixed him, as you did. Rabbi Yochanan was also known as a Gilgal of Yitzchak Avinu. If that brings anything, any connection. So Rabbi Yochanan being Yitzchak, Yishmol being Rish Lakish, right? That a little bit makes sense over here, and that's why in Bav Metzia, when they got into the fight, Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, their final fight, where Rabbi Yochanan got upset and Rish Lakish was dying, so Rabbi Yochanan said about Rish Lakish, they got into a fight about when a knife, a sword, is considered Tahor. I mean, when is the final time where it's finally able to be Makabel Tuma? Like, at what point? So they argue about when it's dipped in the boiling hot water, or when you cool it down, when you throw the cold water on it, what is it? So Rish Lakish held different from Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan said to him, "Listen, yoda bilistuye." In other words, a listim, a robber, would know what he used to rob with. In other words, that's what it is. So the pasuk side is referring to Rabbi Yishmael, but the word listim says that it's Tzitzis Shemeshin is connected to Rashi's word listim and saying that they were connected to one another. At that point, he fulfilled his mission, so Rish Lakish died soon afterward. But it's that idea. I will tell you there is a Medrash Rabbah, the Parashas Rabbah, that says that it's Rish Lakish that says the following line about Rabbi Yishmael in this pasuk. Omar Rish Lakish, Vadai Shakol, Bozes in Mamon, Hu Bozes Nefashos. It's true. Many people steal money. He stole souls. He killed people as well. Maybe it's Rish Lakish trying to say that I was able to be attacking both parts of Rish Lakish. That I was able to be attacking. I didn't kill people. And the robbery, I stopped doing my robbery. And maybe that's what it means, but it's Rish Lakish that brings it up over there. Okay. We asked this before, Binyamin, this is your question. Why would the Malach say bad things about him? Normally, prophecies are there to encourage, not to discourage. This is a terrible prophecy. You're going to have a child who's going to steal from everyone and everybody will hate him. It's a terrible prophecy to tell over to a mother who just lost a child and is about to have another one. It's very disheartening. So what's pshat? Truth is, Sir Chaim Kanievsky, this wasn't a prophecy. It was not a prophecy. Everything the Malach said was up to his bechira. And he could choose to become a better person. This is Gemara and Shabbos Kufnun Vav? I think I wrote Kufnun Beis. That's not true. I think it's Kufnun Vav. That mentions Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak was together with stargazers. The stargazer said about Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak to his mother that your child's going to be born, when he gets older, he's going to be a robber. He's going to be a tremendous robber. So what did his mother do? His mother made sure that his face was always covered. He was like the Bava Sali. Always had a hood around his face. His whole head was covered completely with the hood, so he could never look up. One time, the hood fell off. He looked up at a tree and immediately grabbed from the tree without even thinking, just stealing from the tree. That he had this within him, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. And maybe this is the purpose of why Hagar is being told this. You have to know how to be mechanech your kid. You got to know how to do chinuch. Your kid is going to be a crazy person. Know that going into it. If you didn't know that, right, then it would be hard. But you should know. ADHD, this kid is going to have three times that amount. He is going to be a crazy kid to take care of. You should know that, because the other Makov Yaakov Oz, you should know how to be Mechanech the kid at the end of the day. That's what it says for Chaim Kanievsky. You can change him if you treat him the right way. Who knows? I mean, obviously at the beginning, he was thrown out of the house for being Megalai Rai Shrikhuzam Nabodazara. But perhaps toward the end of his life, the chinuch came back. At some point, Hagar must have been mechanicum well. Something must have happened at some point. Either way, Rabbi Yonasan Eichitz gives another answer. The Yad referenced here, the Yad that we talk about, could be the Yad Hashem that is always open to be makabel tshuva. Right? In other words, there's a Yad that's coming outside. Has anybody heard by Yad Hanukkah? You ever heard that? Yad Hanukkah? Okay, there's a whole thing that obviously Yom Kippur is the last day we can do tshuva, etc., right? But then they say it's not really Yom Kippur, it's really Hoshana Rabbah. That's the Mekubalim. And then they say it's not really Hoshana Rabbah, you really have until Hanukkah. They say it's not only Hanukkah, you really have until Zos Hanukkah. You have until the last day of Hanukkah. And then it's perfect, right? Then you can do it again. But it goes up to Zos Hanukkah. The last time is Zos Hanukkah. There's a Tanya in Hagen that says that on Zos Hanukkah, the eighth day of Hanukkah, there is a hand coming. I should do my right hand because it's Rachamim. The right hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is coming down from Shemayim, grabbing Balei Tshuva and pulling them up. It's there. And then when the eighth day of Hanukkah is over, then the hand goes back out. So the Yad, says Rabbi Yonasan Eichitz, is referring to the Yad that is Mekabel people that are Balei Tshuva. And if so, you can say the following. At first, he's going to be a wild man. He's going to steal from everyone and everything's going to be there. But then the Yad God will accept him with tshuva. Al penei kol akov nafol. He'll be together with his brother Yitzchak. He'll do tshuva, and things will be okay at the end. And that's what Hagar was being told. It was a positive nevuah. Yes, he's going to have a hard life at first, but don't worry. In the end, he'll be okay. He's going to do tshuva, and things are going to be okay. Now we have a lot. The Shlach Kadosh has a famous word. We all say in our bench saying Bakol Mikol Kol, right? Avram Yitzchak Yaakov Bakol Mikol Kol, right? It's literally that translates as in everything, from everything, everything. But what's the pshat? It means that Hashem Avram Avinu was blessed. Hashem Barachas Avram Bakol. Yitzchak was told Ba'uchal Mikol, able to overcome everything. And Yaakov Yesh Li Kol, he told Esav, I have everything. I don't need anything whatsoever. Says the Shlach Kadosh, Bakol and Mikol are not full midos. It's you're sort of everything, but not exactly there. I'm part of everything, but I'm not exactly there. Yaakov is the only one that was full. He was Shalem. He was Kol. He was the one who had absolutely everything. He was the one that was perfect. So here's the pshat. Yishmael was from Avram Avinu. He got all of his power, says the Chassam Sofer, from Bakol, from that. So thus the line in the pasuk, Yado Bakol. You know why he was powerful, why he had a hand, why Yishmael was able to do anything? Because he had the power of his father Avram, Yado Bakol. However, Yaakov, you know, can always overcome him. Who is the one Yaakov, you know, is? Kol. The Yad Kol Bo. The hand of Kol, of Yaakov Avinu, will always be able to overcome Yishmael. Any time that Yishmael and Yaakov are there, then Yaakov Avinu will be able to overcome him, and that's the idea. The idea is that Avram Avinu gave him Kokos. Maybe that's the Shema Tuma, the Matanos, that Avram gave at the end of Parshas Chayisara. Maybe those are the gifts that he gave him. But that's Yado Bakol. His hand will be in everything, but Yaakov Avinu will be able to take care of him, and that's that. In his Kiddushim in Baba Basra, at the end of the first part, the Chassam Sofer says the following. Is a mitziah. I don't know how many people do the Chassam Sofer at the end of the first part of the Basra, but this is unbelievable. He says, when the Jews are in the matzav of Bakol and we're not full yet, then Yishmael rules over us. And that's why the Arabs have power in Eretz Yisrael. When we're in the matzav of Kol and we're all doing good and we're doing better and we have these Shabbos, you know, these Shabbosim where we have people over, etc., when we're Kol, we rule over him. Then we have the ability to defeat him. It's possible that this is the reason why Avram Avinu never married his daughter Bakol. Remember Avram Avinu called his daughter Bakol. At the Gemara Bava Basra Tazayin, he called his daughter Bakol. He couldn't marry Bakol to Yitzchak, because combining Bakol with Mikol, with Yitzchak, would allow the child to not be as full, as great. He needed a Rivka Imenu to allow for Yaakov to come out to be a Kol. That's the idea. He wanted to make sure that his kids would not be subjugated to the Bakol of Yishmael, and that's the reason why Bakol could not marry Yitzchak. If you look up the Gemara, not in Baba Basra Tazayin, but in Baba Basra Kuf Mem Aleph, Tosis asked that of the Kashi. He says, if there was no one else to marry Yitzchak, why in the world didn't he marry Bakol, his daughter, off to Yitzchak? Now granted, they were brother and sister, but if you have no one else to marry them off to, what are you going to do? Marry them together. So he said, he gives two answers. One of them is not that it was gross, right? But he does give two answers. At the end of the day, this could be another answer, that Bakol was the meter that he didn't want to get involved. As a side note, by the way, we don't know who Bakol was from. We don't know if Bakol was from Hagar or if Bakol was from Sarai, you know. It seems from the Chumash that Sarai only had one child, and that's that. But then again, we have absolutely no idea, because no daughters seem to have been born to Bakol or Keturah as well, out to Hagar or Keturah as well. I am going to point out that Avinu had two other Piyuakshim according to the Medrash Rabbah. In the Medrash Rabbah in Parshas Chayisara, it says that Avinu had five wives, not two. He had Sarah, Keturah, Hagar, and then it says Pilagshin. He had two Pilagshin that he married. And that was it. There were five wives that belonged to Avram. We don't know about two of them whatsoever. We're going to end that sum over there. We're going to end with one little story over here. The beginning of the year 1932, that's not true. I messed that up. In the end of the year 1932, it's actually right then. I did that because originally it was 1933 and I realized that my date was off. In the middle of the year, let's call it middle of the year, and then we'll say whatever. In 1932, it was a group of Jewish men, young Jewish men, who decided they were going to make Aliyah, they were going to learn together in Eretz Yisrael, they were going to go learn Torah, that's it. One of them's name was Rav Shmaya Eliezer Dikovsky or Dykovsky. I don't know what exactly how to pronounce his name. He was misupik whether he should go or not. He decided he was going to go get a bracha from the Chafetz Chaim. He wanted to get a Chafetz Chaim, a Birchas Prater, before he left, to ask him his shailos, should he go, should he not go? So he went to Radin for Yom Kippur. He wanted to go for Yom Kippur. It turned out it was the last Yom Kippur of the Chafetz Chaim's life. The Chafetz Chaim passed away in Elul of 1933. in Elul of 1933, right after Hitler Yimach Shemo came into power. That's when Chafetz Chaim passed away. On Motzei Yom Kippur, he got to go into the Chafetz Chaim to speak to him. And he told him, I've got two questions. His first question was, he didn't know if he was going to be able to learn, you know, as diligently as he had been learning in Europe. Would I be able to do that in Eretz Yisrael? So it's a lot poorer. I might have to go into work a little bit. But here, I can learn and I'm going to be okay. Which one should I do? And the Chafetz Chaim said, don't worry about it. If you can learn in Chutz Laretz, you can learn in Eretz Yisrael. You can go ahead and learn. Don't worry about it whatsoever. That was his first question. His second question was this. He was scared. Eretz Yisrael at the time was in constant danger of the Arabs. It's 1932, remember. 1929 was the great massacre in Hebron, right, when all those people were killed in Hebron. So they were worried about what the Arabs would do. So he said, should I be afraid of what the Arabs are doing? Should I be afraid of what's going to go on over there? The Chafetz Chaim stopped him before he stopped the question. He finished the question. He said the following. He says, the Torah tells us the Yishmael will be a para adam. The Torah is mitzvahs, which means the Torah lasts forever. And there is nothing that changes about the Torah. And if that's so, that means that he will always be a para adam. Yishmael will never change. He will never be anything but a para adam. That will be his mitzvahs for all time. For all time. Even if all the democratic societies in the world come. He didn't say democratic. Use a different word. I think he said socialist. But I do. Democratic countries in the world would come and try to tame Yishmaelim. If they come and try to tame them, it's not going to work, says the Chafetz Chaim. They're incapable of such training. Listen to this line. It says this. I doubt this is the words of the Chafetz Chaim. I think somebody embellished this a little bit. If he becomes a lawyer, he'll be a para adam lawyer. Although, no offense, Benjamin, but I think most lawyers are. And I like that little joke. I put that on the sheet itself. He's a para adam lawyer. If he's a doctor, he's a para adam doctor. Right? And they certainly wouldn't become accountants. He then stopped after that. He stopped and he sighed. Chafetz Chaim. Stopped and he sighed. And he said, oi, do you realize what they're going to do to us at the end of time, right before Mashiach comes? And then he stopped and he gave the guy a bracha. He said, go Rav Shmaya, go to Eretz Yisrael and go learn. You'll be perfectly fine. You should be a bracha. You should be matzliach. Didn't say, well, not then. Although the famous idea is by Rav Schwab says that he did mention the Nazis in benching once. He stopped his benching and he said 6 million is nothing to what they're going to do 10 years from now. In the middle of his benching, he did that when Rav Schwab was there. It's in Rav Schwab's paper, Mayan Beis HaShoeva, says what the Chafetz Chaim did. He literally said in the middle of benching, when he was talking, when he said, Rachim Noah Hashem Elokeinu, right before Rachim Noah, he said it out loud. He said, oi, 6 million is not 6 million of the amount of people that died in the First World War altogether. He said, 6 million is nothing. Wait until the next time, 10 years from now. That's what he had said. And this is whatever it was, 1931, 1932. That's what I think it was. I think that was the number altogether.
Probably more, whatever.
It depends. Whatever it was. I don't know. Maybe he said out loud 6 million. But he said like that. And he said, Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer said, this is the father-in-law of Rav Aaron Cutler, said that this is a pearl of wisdom from the Chafetz Chaim that deserves to be studied. That this line over here needs to be studied over and over what the Chafetz Chaim was saying. Because every word of it, he said, from what this person was telling him, what Shmai was telling him, was something that the Chafetz Chaim wanted for future generations. He said it was something special.
Interesting that in Israel we heard that there was a Bedouin who became a doctor, mm-hmm. and he was considered a very intelligent young man. And then he was supposed to go to one of the hospitals to serve the hospital, and they couldn't find him. And they found out that he went to join the Islamic State to fight
IS.
IS. So in other words, here a young Arab who was a brilliant young man, he became a Bedouin.
Right, but at the same note, there's doctors in Hadassah and Karim that are Arabs, and they take care of Jewish patients.
It's crazy, right? Because you see the same way. They must have some Judaism in them. But the point is, like, you're going from a doctor.
And there's Arab doctors in the hospitals in Israel, just like there's Jewish doctors.
I think you're defining a basic character trait, according
yeah, to Yeah, so it wouldn't be specific.
It's always acted upon.
Yeah. But I just think this is unbelievable, because you have a doctor who's there to save people. And goes literally the opposite way and goes to kill people. That's just going literally the opposite way. How does a person do that? I can understand a lawyer. It's the doctor that bothers me. That throws me off a little bit. Yeah, that's an unbelievable story. Obviously, there are individuals. I mean, there's no question. The same way that we have individuals.
I know.
But without